Welcome to Steppin' Out of Babylon, produced by Sue Supriano. Babylon is everywhere. It's the isms and schisms not only within the system, but within ourselves. Let's unify, stand aligned, and step out of Babylon.
Hi, everybody. My name's Sue Supriano, and I'm really happy today to have the opportunity to speak with Mary Beth Brangen and Jim Heddle. Mary Beth and Jim have been doing video documentaries for 18 years, and they've done so many of them that I'm only going to tell you about a very few just to give you an idea of three of them. One is called Choice Point, California's Water and Radioactive Waste. Another one is Strategic Trust, The Making of Nuclear-Free Palau. And the third one is Bordering on Tyranny, Thailand's Dilemma, which is about genocide of ethnic people in Thailand. And a fourth one is called Nuclear Showdown, Peligro, Nuclear Showdown on the Rio Grande. So that's just a little bit of sampling. And now they have also two organizations, one called Option 2000 Productions, and another one is EON, Ecological Options Network Documentaries. And we've known each other for a little while, but we're always both so busy we never really have a chance to do the interview. So I'm just learning about everything here as you are hearing about it. And it's just so much work you've been doing. It's just very exciting. And Jim, you were telling me that a couple of the documentaries that you did really help stop some nuclear power plants, is it?
Well, both Peligro and Choice Point were made about attempts to, they were citizen organizing attempts to stop the plans of the corporations and the government to put nuclear waste dumps, right, one on the Colorado, the other on the Rio Grande. Mm-hmm. So we made these about the movement and for the movement, and we're very pleased to report that in both those cases, certainly not because of our films necessarily, but our films contributed to the success of the citizens' movement in stopping both dumps.
Mm-hmm. Well, and as media activists, as we all three are here, we really know of the importance of the media and how much people don't have information about what's going on, and that's what you've been doing so much of, is exposing things and giving people information. I would like to talk about your most recent projects. Mary Beth, you want to say something about that?
Mm-hmm. Well, our last documentary, which we completed last year, is called Public Exposure, DNA, Democracy, and the Wireless Revolution. And that one is about a subject that many people do not know about, which is the pollution from electrosmog, from all the man-made sources of radiation. But in this documentary, we particularly focused in on the microwave pollution from cell phones and the antennas that are put up all over in order to broadcast to those cell phones. And these sources of microwave pollution are now covering the planet almost entirely. There are over 3,600 commercial satellites circling the planet every day, and commercial and military, and they, a large number of them, beam down microwave signals onto the planet. For various reasons, and then you've got all the military sources, which are line of sight, as well as the the ones that they're bouncing off the ionosphere from, that's the HAARP project, and causing all kinds of disruptions of our biosystems, as well as the signals that they're putting through the oceans. Now, that's just military, but the commercial, which is bad enough, the military is bad enough, but the commercial applications have been growing exponentially, and now pretty much there's nowhere to hide from these, because every place you go that is serviced by cell phones, there are not just one antenna every, what, mile or quarter mile. There are as many antennas as there are commercial carriers. So because we have all this competition, you may be being exposed to 17 different sources of cell phone radiation. And this is 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And the science that is out there is, well, there's competing science. There's dueling science. The science that is sponsored by the industry, and then, of course, the more independent science. And the scientists that, even though they were employed originally by the industry, chose to speak out and publish their studies anyway, even if it went against the wishes of the industry as to the safety.
I knew it was controversial, and I'm one of those. I haven't even had a cell phone that long, and I know it feels like it's probably not good, and I don't want it to be true because it's so convenient.
Well, I think it's very sobering to realize that the environment that we now live in, and probably in your and my lifetime, I'm about 60 now, the electromagnetic environment of the Earth has been completely transformed, certainly since the beginning of the last century, and pretty much in the last 50 years, so that we now live in a microwave environment, an electromagnetic environment, if you will, that our cells and all the other organisms and creatures on Earth did not evolve in. So this is a foreign environment that we're living in. We don't know the results of it. The term cell phone itself, I mean, the cell in cell phone doesn't refer to some little microchip in the cell phone itself. It refers to the pattern of radiation around the cell phone antenna tower. You have to imagine a circle, like the petals of a flower radiating around any given tower. And in order to provide total coverage, which is what we're trying to move toward, there needs to be a cell phone tower with a radiative pattern that is contiguous with the next cell phone tower. And so in order to make good the claim that Sprint and the other telecommunications industries say, wherever you go, there we are, they're going to have to blanket the entire planet with cells. So that means whether you're using a cell phone or not, you're exposed to this willy-nilly. So that's why we entitled the subtitled our film DNA Democracy and the Wireless Revolution, because this is a direct attack not only on our DNA, because this kind of radiation damages DNA, which is the basis of our immune system and our growth system and our everything else, but it also is a violation of our democratic rights. This is radiation without representation.
Mm-hmm. Sounds really serious, but I have to say I'm also not that surprised. These are really awful lot of very serious things going on these days.
The irony here is that the government has basically delegated or abandoned its responsibility for scientific research on the public health aspects of this technology, turned it over to the corporations, the very corporations that are promoting the technology. And so guess what? You have a kind of prostitute science that gets the results that the industry want. And if it doesn't, there's a very strong, you know, efforts at repression or of denial or discrediting of the people and the research that's being done. But fortunately, the body of information growing up about the health effects of this radiation is overwhelming.
What are some of those health effects, Mary Beth?
calcium flux disruption is a big one, and the calcium levels in our body are very, very, very important. It's the way that the electrical signals, I mean, calcium's appropriate level in the body is necessary for the electrical systems to work in the body. We see, we are electromagnetic beings, first and foremost. We have to understand that. And our bodies are not just chemical reactions, but electromagnetic interactions and fields are going on. And in order for our cells to communicate with one another, they send electrical signals, which is in the form of like a song from the mitochondria in the cells. And the fact that this calcium flux is disrupted leads to abnormal cell growth, as well as a disruption in that communication in all sorts of ways. So then there's also been noticed DNA breaks that are irreversible. There's been noticed in some animal studies irreversible infertility. There's been noticed a disruption in the melatonin-serotonin balance, which the serotonin levels are exquisitely necessary, and they provide the foundation, the serotonin, for the higher emotions of joy and love and compassion and so on. And then the melatonin provides the control over your depth of sleep and rest and repair that your body does at night. And so one of the common problems is often sleep disorders, anxiety, tendency towards irritability and rage, and memory loss and short-term concentration problems. And it goes on like that. And immune problems. There's the suggestions of great connection between this and Alzheimer's as well, and the other autoimmune diseases. Mm-hmm. So there needs to be more done because of the fact that Jim just mentioned that the industry is doing most of the science and paying for most of the science. Of course, they're not asking the right questions. And then, like, one study was released recently by, I think it was the American Medical Association, and they said, oh, not to worry, our study showed no increase in brain tumors. However, the study did show an increase in neural epithelial cancer, which is different from a brain tumor, but nevertheless, it was an increase. And they didn't want, but that's the way they reported it. Well, we didn't see this other thing. So that's the kind of danger that happens with the corporate media's reporting of corporate science. Mm-hmm.
It sounds so familiar because it's the same dynamic with so many subjects, and we're going to concentrate on these particular subjects here in this interview. But I know that the ivory tower has been bought out, and everything just seems to have to do with money. So, this is very interesting hearing about the specifics of the cell phones and that the effects of the electromagnetic environment. And of course, we have so many negative effects from so many other things too, the air, the water, and on. So, Jim, you want to say something?
Well,
and I want to let the audience know again that my guests are Mary Beth Brangen and Jim Heddle, and they are documentary videographers and activists, media activists. Go on, Jim.
Well, I just wanted to make the observation that this is a technology that was first of all developed as weaponry. So, you can imagine that if it can be used as weaponry, it may not be all that good for your health. The most famous example, historical example perhaps, is the fact that the Russians bombarded the U.S. Embassy in Moscow with electromagnetic radiation, knowing from their own test that it did have an effect on mood and health. And so the first U.S. ambassador came down with, I guess it was leukemia, and was sent home and then replaced by another one, and he came down with leukemia as well. And so this alerted the U.S. to do their own research, And they concluded that, in fact, the whole staff had been affected in various ways, children and all the residents in the compound, and promptly just kind of forgot about that information. Mm-hmm. Then it was during the Second World War as well that the effect of radar on personnel and the effect of cathode ray tubes on personnel led to glaucoma, cancer, mood changes, headaches, all that kind of thing.
Well, so we can't escape the cell phones, whether we have one or not. We're all in this the soup of these electromagnetic rays. But there's some, but it's worse some places than others. And since I work on radio, you work at we were talking earlier about being inside a radio station or near a transmitter. You want to talk a little bit about that, Mary Beth?
Yeah, well, the being closer to the source of transmission is very, very hazardous to your health because you're getting the worst of the beams in the first couple of miles. And the closer you get to the transmitter, of course, the more strongly you're receiving it. So just recently in Italy, there's been a big hubbub, actually, because the Pope has a huge array of transmitting radio antennas that the people who were in the blasting of them had noticed terrible results. They were having cancer clusters. They felt very, very adversely affected, and they complained, and the environmental health minister in Italy told the Vatican that they should reduce their emissions, and they promised they would, and then they didn't, and this health minister actually threatened to pull the plug on the Vatican if they didn't reduce their emissions. But then in the end, what happened was he resigned. The minister resigned, and the Vatican, to my knowledge, is still transmitting at those high and damaging levels.
Well, that's a story that we could go a lot deeper into, but we don't have time to do that. There's just endless stories, that's for sure. Well, I guess we should talk about what we can do about it and about your film before we go into other positive options, because it's also so heavy.
Well, our film focuses not only on the problems, but also on what citizens groups around the world and the country are doing, around the world, really, are doing. There's an international dimension to this, too, much more than we can go into. But citizens all over, this is an interesting issue because it transcends class and race and locality. And in many cases, it's very wealthy neighborhoods that are now mounting the fight against the electromagnetic pollution of cell phone towers in their backyards. It's much like the citizens of Hunter's Point or other, low-income communities are always the locations of the polluting industries. But this particular technology doesn't respect those usual boundaries.
Yeah, I think there is some kind of struggle around that in Berkeley, actually. But I wasn't understanding it and wasn't paying attention to it, so I'm really glad to be understanding this. These things more.
Now, one of the interesting things that which really shows, I think, the corporate mentality to a T is that the industry initiated preemptive legislation that prevents citizens or local authorities, like common councils or mayors or whatever, from interfering with the placement of cell phone antennas on environmental or health grounds. They can only oppose them on aesthetic ground.
How bizarre. Or actually, it's not bizarre. It's like the WTO. Nothing can interfere with profit. But what's interesting is this aesthetic thing. But people get it. Nothing can interfere with profit.
Right. And it's not that they can oppose it on aesthetic grounds either. They can just oppose a certain placement. The Telecommunications Act of 1996 includes clauses that ensures that the industry can place their antennas anywhere they want. You just, within a very small amount of parameters can choose where, you know, on aesthetic grounds, but you can't deny the antenna altogether. And so people are filing lawsuits against them. And there's mounting public opposition in the United States, as it is in Austria and in different countries in Europe. The European countries have much more developed public discussion about this. And in Sweden, it's actually included in the category of understood and established handicaps. It's for people who respond extra sensitively to this, and those people are called electrosensitives, and the numbers of those people are growing by leaps and bounds all over the world. And what it is certain individuals become pushed over the edge, and their immune system and their electromagnetic system becomes allergic to other sources, man-made sources of electromagnetics, and it often goes along with chemical sensitivity, and one will sometimes make you more predisposed to the other. But electrosensitives are now recognized as a group of handicapped in Sweden officially, and are given the social benefits as if you were blind or crippled.
If people want to know more about this, they could get a copy of our film, which is called Public Exposure, DNA, Democracy, and the Wireless Revolution. The easiest way to learn more information about this is to go to our website, which is publicexposure1, that's the number one, .org, or to energyfields.org, which is the website of our co-producer of the film, the Council on Wireless Technology Impacts.
Okay. We're going to give that again at the end, too, which is that we got about another 5 minutes to talk about Eon. So much to talk about. And we're leaving so much out because these folks, Mary Beth Brangan and Jim Heddle, have just been doing incredible work for years. So tell us about Eon, the Ecological Options Network. What's working where?
What we're talking about with Eon is to have a place that simplifies the understandings of what's working where, and to look at the real models of working solutions that are in action today that satisfy the survival challenges that we're facing as a species, which are many, 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 as you know. So we wanted to do what we call binocular vision, which means you have 50% of your focus spent on the threat, the problems, so you really understand what the root causes of our unsustainable systems are and our dysfunctionalities. And then you have 50% of your focus fully on the promise and the opportunities and the solutions. And so that gives you the binocular vision that you need in order to really survive and to thrive and to be creative in our approach, because you leave out neither. You're neither a Pollyanna, you know, rose-colored glasses, nor are you a Cassandra, you know, the sky is falling, there's nothing to be done, and you're powerless. But you've got them both in sight, and so you can navigate the rapids most effectively.
Mm-hmm. Balance seems to be a key to so many things, and as your videographers, you also have these really very clear pieces of paper that I'm looking at with pictures, and it's just the graphics and everything are just really nice. Here it says, the race between emerging ecological options and converging global crises. One side is ecological options, the other side there are evolutionary crises, and for every crisis there's an option. Jim.
In our work around the world, we have come to realize that on every continent, at every level, from the international institutions down to the village level, people are working to confront the converging crises that industrial civilization has created. But the emphasis in so much of the news that you hear is on the problems, not on what people are doing to create solutions at the grassroots level and at the international levels. And what we want to do is connect the people that are working to solve these problems both in the global north and in the global south, because I think we have a lot to learn from the global south.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's for sure.
So that's what the Ecological Options Network is beginning to work on doing, mm-hmm. facilitating the flow of information about positive options and working alternatives mm-hmm. between the north and the south.
And I notice in the options is people-centered economics, renewable energy, sustainable agricultural, substantive democracy, alternative security, nonviolent conflict resolution, bio-benign technologies, bioremediation, eco-community, conscious evolution, cultural transformation. Well, I'm going to run out of time here, but it seems very, very beautifully thought out, and we sure do need those positive options. And so many people think there aren't any. So I want you to give, Mary Beth, please, the webpage and stuff again so people can get hold of you and the name of your next documentary. When will it be coming out?
Well, our next documentary is Public Power, From Energy Crisis to Solar Democracy. And it's using California as a microcosm of what's happening with our energy sources all around the world, and looking at particularly Bush and global warming and globalization and the antidote to that, which is local control of our resources. Contact us at Public Exposure One. The number one, public exposure, one word, the number one, .org. Mm-hmm. And we can also be reached at options2000. Our email is opt2000, the number, OP as in Paul, T as in Tom, 2000, at variomail.com. That's V as in Victor, E-R-I-O-M-A-I-L.com.
Okay, and give me the name. Somehow I thought that the documentary, on the DNA democracy, what's the name of it?
It's called Public Exposure, DNA Democracy and the Wireless Revolution.
Okay, great, and you can get that now.
Sooner
rather than later. Okay, thank you very much, Mary Beth Brangen and Jim Heddle. And my name's Sue Supriano. Thanks so much for listening.